Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
This is probably my favorite episode that we've done on Private Club Radio. So much going on. First off, we're going to have a masterclass with Gary Collins of Master Club Advisors. And Gary is going to give us some tips on how to bring more golfers. And you're not going to believe what it is. He's actually proposing that golf professionals at private clubs give free lessons on the driving range. Free lessons. It's a wild idea. You got to find out what that's all about when we have Gary on here shortly. After that, we're going to be speaking with a good friend of mine, Mark Ensign, who I brought up on the show about a month ago. We're going to talk about the art of the storytelling, and you're going to want to have your food and beverage folks listen to this episode because there is a tip about throwing private events and weddings that you have to hear. You literally have to hear. It's one of the best tips that's ever been shared on Private Club Radio. So between these two pieces of advice, how to bring more golfers to your private club and how to drive more revenue to your F&B department through the events that your club puts on, this episode is worth the price of admission. I've got some really exciting news to share with you. The pre-order for the Definitive Guide to Membership Marketing book is now sold out. Thank you to those of you who bought a copy, who pre-ordered a copy. You got those free gifts. You got the special price. A lot of you actually made a donation to the PCMA Scholarship Fund by doing that. So someone's going to go to the national conference because of you. We sold so many books, I think we'll be able to pay for someone to go to the conference this year, which is really exciting. And just want to say thank you to Michael Crandall, who had this to say about the book. He wrote me this email the other day. Michael writes, "Your book is super. There's nothing like it out there, not even close. Congratulations." Thank you, Michael, for those kind words. And everyone who's read the book so far has similar things to say, which I'm really pleased about because, to be completely frank with you, I was a little nervous when I wrote that book after it was done. I said, I'm going to send this to a lot of people who've been in the business three times, four times as long as I have. What are they going to think? And luckily, people have really embraced the message. There's some rogue concepts in there, folks. It's not your standard run-of-the-mill membership type marketing type book. There are some intriguing things, some hacks, some little-known secrets that I'm sharing. I hope you can pick up a copy. You won't be able to get a pre-order, of course, but you'll be able to pick up your copy on March 31st when it's officially released. You'll be able to find it on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. In fact, you can pre-order the book on those sites right now as we speak. And if you do want a signed copy, you can, of course, purchase one at membershipmarketingbook.com. So thank you so much to all those who pre-ordered the book. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope it's a guide that serves you well for many years to come. Now, the last thing I want to mention before this episode really gets kicked off is that I'm excited to be bringing a presentation, a pre-conference education to the PCMA National Conference. It's going to happen on September 24th. It's an all-day event. I'm calling it the Digital Marketing Bootcamp. So if you've been kind of stuck on your online marketing or not sure what to do, worried about privacy issues, all that's going to be explained in my Digital Marketing Bootcamp. Head on over to askpcma.org and you can sign up for the conference and sign up for that education. I'm really excited to be bringing that to folks in Nashville. All right, it's time to start the masterclass.
And now, it's time for your monthly masterclass, presented by Master Club Advisors.
Well, welcome to the second edition of Masterclass, presented by Master Club Advisors. Today, I am joined by Gary Collins of Master Club Advisors. Gary, welcome to the segment.
Thank you, Gabe. Proud to be here. We love your show. You do some incredible stuff. Yeah. Norm and I really, really like your show.
Well, I've loved having Norm on as a guest. I'm excited to have you. First off, let's get started. Give me a little background about yourself, Gary.
Been in the club business all my life, you know, all my working life. First job out of college was in the club business, and I absolutely love it. I worked for many years for Club Corporation of America, Robert Dedman, in the early days. I was a manager of the year in the CCA system. I worked for Perry Dye, We had Japanese money. We were buying clubs all over the country. At the end of my career, I was working for Laco, the people who own Riviera. Mm-hmm. We had a management company. You know, Riviera has hosted the U.S. Open, the PGA Championship. It's a spectacular facility. It's one of my favorite golf courses in the world. It's been a great business for me. I really, truly love the club business.
I got to get my hands on some of that Japanese money. It sounds pretty good, Gary.
It was pretty good at one time. It kind of disappeared there, you know, for a while.
Well, Gary, today's masterclass is going to be on growing the game of golf. And you've got some outside-the-box ideas. The one that caught my eye immediately was you think that people should offer free golf lessons at the club. Let's talk about that.
Gabe, I can't tell you, you know, this is outside the box, and I would like to lay a little foundation for it first. I really believe that we've got to grow the game. We all know that golf got oversupplied. And I know you work in a membership and marketing. And listen, dues are the lifeblood of every club. You know, you've heard it a million times. Sure. We're in the dues business. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to add new members, if we're going to have all clubs be successful, we've got to get a bigger base playing golf. And to get that bigger base playing golf, we may have to do some unusual things. You know, when we talk about marketing, we talk about different and better. What makes your club different and better? And we hear all the time, you know, we have great food. Clubs do have great food. And private clubs tend to have really highly maintained, great golf courses. We have a great golf course. But if every club has great food and a great golf course, what makes you different?
Yeah, what separates you from the pack? Exactly.
I think one of the things that could make us different is if we were known as a club where you really learn to play golf, I believe people would be lined up around the block to join. If you knew that when you joined this club, your handicap was going to improve by 25%. If you knew that your children were not only going to learn the core values about golf, about integrity and honesty, but that your children were going to be better players and were going to develop a lifetime skill that would help them in business, maybe even get collegiate scholarships, everybody would be wanting to join.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways that we could be different and better and make people want to join is if they knew by joining this club, they would be a better golfer. And one of the ways we could do that is if we provided they're not free lessons. They're included in your dues. You're already paying dues. If we had an assistant pro on the range 4 hours a day, every day from 3 until 7 o'clock in the evening, and all he did was walk up and down the range and give people pointers and help them with their game and go over to the short game area. If everybody was really learning to play the game better, I think it could be incredible.
I think you're right about that. My own dad, he's a former PGA professional, and he likes to just go to driving ranges and do that. He doesn't charge anybody, but he'll just go and give people pointers. And it's just something that he gets a kick out of. And then, of course, people enjoy playing the game of golf when they can then play it a little bit better, you know, for sure.
It's so unusual that you say that about your dad, because if you talk to great pros, nearly all the great pros have always done some version of this. The great pros are always out there interfacing with their members. They're out there on the range talking to their members. You know, how'd you play yesterday? What were the issues? You know, you're laying off a little bit at the top. I mean, great pros have always done this, giving tips. I think if we actually institutionalized it and set it up and people knew it was there and available for them and their children, you know, come down here between 3 and 7 every day and we're going to have somebody giving you complimentary lessons. Now, many pros have been concerned, because this is a source of income for them, it's a valid concern that it would eat into their income. I'm convinced if we got this going and people started getting to be better golfers in the free lessons they were getting, they'd start taking more individual private lessons.
Sure.
I think we could actually grow the pride bigger for the golfer, for the golf pros.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot of businesses will give you a little taste of their services. And if you like them, you'll buy more. I think that works in industries outside of golf. Why can't it work in this industry as well?
100% correct. I think part of the problem is it's just outside the box. You normally pay for piano lessons. You pay for dance lessons. You pay for whatever lessons that it is that you take in life. And we also pay for golf lessons. You know, mm-hmm. That's just the way we play.
Sure.
And they're relatively expensive. And especially if you're a poor player, it's hard to justify spending that money when you feel like you're not getting better. But if you were getting those as part of your dues and you were getting better and better, I think it could be very powerful, not only in growing the game, but in growing the membership of the club.
Yeah, I think you're right. And maybe even converting some of those social members, people that maybe are scared to take the leap up in dues and in membership. if you get those social members out on the range practicing, they're probably going to be more likely to turn into golf members and pay more of those dues.
Gabe, you have hit such an excellent point, particularly here in Florida. Many of our gated communities include membership, but you have a choice between golf and social. And many of those clubs they don't have enough golf members. They need that premium dues payer.
Right.
And it's because many people worked hard all their lives. They were very successful. They built a good business. They buy a beautiful home on a golf course because it looks beautiful, but they've never played golf in their life. I firmly believe that if we worked on this lesson program, we could convert a large number of social members to golf members.
Mm-hmm.
They're interested. They kind of want to learn, play, but they're just, you know, they're not at ease with the game. They don't even know the basic, you know, how to repair a divot, or they feel uncomfortable about the game. And if we made them more comfortable about the game and helped them learn to play it, we would convert them from social to golf members. And the financial impact that could make on the health of the club is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the average club that's short of golf members. If they converted 50 of their social members to golf members within the next 6 months, do you realize the difference that would make in the financial health?
Sure. Incredible it would be. And they're already customers. And that's always my thing when I'm talking to clients, is that the easiest person to sell to is someone who's already bought. And if they're already a social member, they're already in touch with your brand. They already know about you. They already like you. They already trust you. It's just letting them take that next logical step in the process.
I love what you said there, because, you know, our greatest source of members are existing members. We want to reach our existing people. It's obvious you're a guy that markets to clubs. It's funny, when I was presenting this to a club, some people got excited about giving it to the new people and said, well, we don't want to do this for our existing members because it'll take away from the pros. I'm like, oh my God, don't be crazy. You can't give the new members
right.
something that you didn't give the members. Give this to the members and they will bring more members to you.
Right.
I mean, you have nailed it. You have absolutely nailed it. If we make them have fun, they already know us. We make it part of it. We can convert those members.
I love it. I think that would be a home run, Gary. I'd love to see some clubs start doing that. What other ideas do you have for growing the game, Gary?
Well, there's 1,000 of them out there, and this is going to tie to this very closely. I'm going to talk about scoring keys, and you're going to read more and more about this. Scoring keys is a trademark name by golf course architect Jan Beljan. Little plug here. Jan is my better half and one of two women golf course architects.
All right, so you won't have to pay her for mentioning it on the show. We won't have to pay the copyright infringement fees, huh?
Yeah, exactly. But this is a great program, and it's a great name. So many, when we said family tees or forward tees or senior tees or women's tees, those were exclusive. You know, it's this group. Scoring tees is inclusive. Everybody yep. wants to score. Everybody mm-hmm. wants to play better. So by calling these things scoring tees, it really made a difference in how they were perceived. There's a lot in the name. Words are very, very powerful.
Yeah, you're right.
Scoring tees was she set these up at Pelican's Nest. It's first place. They're now at two or three clubs that she's got in. They're only about 4,000 yards. But here's part of what really made scoring tees work. And it ties into growing the game, because if you want to play better, chip and putt is where the scoring is.
That's right.
And so if we can chip and putt better, we play better. If we can get our short game better, we play better. She set up the scoring tees, and many people thought they would be for the women and the seniors in the beginning. But at Pelican's Nest, the golf pro there got really behind it, Chris Sheehan, a great guy. And he started having play with the pro days from both the scoring tees and the back tees. And they got a group of the single-digit handicappers who started playing the scoring, then play their regular 18-hole round. And USGA wouldn't like us to talk about this, but it'll shock you, but people gamble on the golf course. They started throwing a few dollars in the pot and going back out for an extra 9 holes on the scoring tees.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
When the single digit handicapper started playing the scoring tees, all of a sudden it removed all the stigma associated with a forward tee.
Sure.
There's some real interesting facts about this. Many collegiate golf coaches in their collegiate program have their players play the most forward tee one day a week just for practice,
mm-hmm.
because it isn't about just wailing on your driver as
right.
far as you can hit it. It's about golf course management.
Right.
Where do I put this ball to be able to get it in, get it closest possible to make birdie? The point of long story is it turned out to be an incredible success. I want to talk about that, you know, it really helped. I think it's going to help grow the game. And again, in a community, this was in a gated community, it started converting social members to golf members. But the most amazing thing was, is, you know, as you know, aging golf memberships are a problem all over the country, and particularly in Florida.
Yeah.
And they had older members who had loved the club and played golf a lot, but they had reduced to playing, you know, they went from 5 days a week to 3 days a week to 2 days a week to 1 day a week. Well, once they started playing the scoring tees and it was easier on them, easier on their body, all of a sudden they're playing three and four and sure. five times a week again.
It's a lot easier to hit a 9-iron or a pitching wedge than a 5-wood all the time.
Exactly. Cart fees went up, green fees went up, guest fees went up, rounds went up. I mean, this was a home run. You can't just build them, though. You know, this is almost build it and it'll happen. You have to program around it. You have to have fun things to do. One of the things that Chris Sheehan did was he started having a short game championship playing the scoring tees.
Nice.
So the club has a short game championship, and yep. you play the short tees, and you become the club's short game champion.
Yeah.
This was really a fun thing. And he's a good player. He's a very good player. He played from the tips one day in a play with the pro thing and shot 69. He played from the scoring tees the next day and shot 71. He's like, you know, how can he reduce the course? It reduced the course by 3,000 yards.
Yep. No, it's totally true. And you're not used to hitting some of the shots or some of those clubs in your bag, and it gives you a whole another layout of the course. It's really cool, I think.
It really is cool. And think about this, Gabe. For a club, it's like almost building a new golf course without building one.
Right.
All of a sudden, you have 27 holes, not just 18. You have your regular 18-hole course, and then you have this executive course that you can play within it.
Sure.
In this particular case, they were redoing bunkers, and so they did this for practically no cost at all. When you're moving the bunker sand out, they're going to have to get rid of the old bunker sand. They're going to have to haul it off. That was mm-hmm. actually hauling cost. Rather than haul it off, they just used it to build the tees.
Nice.
So
very
for practically
cool.
nothing. Yep. They got these. They built an entire new nine holes.
That's awesome. I love that idea. Do you know if any architects are starting to actually build that into their designs or anything? Because I think that would be really cool.
It really is cool, and it's being talked about a lot. You're going to see Jan talking about this. I think she may be in a program for this year's U.S. Women's Open. She may be in a program for that. Jan is working through the chairs of the American Society of Golf Course Architects, and in 2 years, she will be the president.
Wow.
And it's been published in a couple of magazines now. I think there's always been, you know, forward tees, but this is a new concept and a different name, and that name is important.
Yeah.
Scoring tees. It's inclusive. Everybody plays it. It's mm-hmm. not just for juniors, not just for women. It's not just for juniors. It's for if you want to score better.
Yep.
I love the name scoring tees.
I do too. That's excellent. Those are two incredible ideas, Gary. And I hope we can get back on another edition of Masterclass to get even more of those ideas. But our time's coming to an end here. But I want to first congratulate you, Gary. You have raised a lot of money in the FLCMAA Seminole Region Children's Charities, over $6 million to date, actually, since inception. You're raising about $500,000 per year for that charity. Tell us about the award that you're going to be receiving this week.
Gabe, I'm so glad you asked me about this. I love this thing. And by the way, it isn't me. It's all of the Seminole Region. We have a committee of nine guys that are absolutely incredible. JDPA Boca West started this 26 years ago. I've been on the committee for 18 years, and it's been selected as one of the premier charity events in the nation. This thing is over the top. I've got to get you down here as my guest 1 year.
Okay, I'd
there's
love
a gala
that.
The Sunday night. There's a gala the Sunday night before, and there's a tournament on Monday. It's an absolutely fabulous event. But we had been going along reasonably well for a number of years, and we were sort of reaching a point where we were stagnant. We were looking for new sources of income. And so I started 7 years ago, I started a marathon golf program. And people play as many holes of golf as they can play in one day.
Really?
They have
wow.
a lot of fun.
More if you're playing from those forward tees, I think, actually, from the scoring yeah. tees. From the scoring tees.
No question. You move up once in a while just to save your back a little bit. I played 154 holes last year.
Wow.
But I had 22 teams at 22 clubs. I'm getting the award. And listen, I love getting the award and getting to stand up there and be recognized and get the award. But believe me, it wasn't me. It's everybody. Every marathoner, every marathon supporter, everybody that works on this, everybody that works on the committee. It's an incredible experience. But we started this thing 7 years ago with Marathon Golf to add to Marathon Golf is one part of the Seminole Region Charity Tournament. It's composed of three parts, Marathon Golf, the gala on Sunday night, and then the regular tournament on Monday. We've now reached a point. Last year, Marathon Golf raised $210,000.
Wow.
Of the $500,000, $600,000 in total that we raised. So we've now reached a point that approximately 40% of the income comes from Marathon Golf. It all goes to South Florida Children's Charities. It all goes to South Florida Children's Charities. And so Unicorn Foundation, which is one of those charities, is recognizing me this Saturday night. I'm very excited about this.
Congratulations, Gary. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Masterclass and sharing your tips with us. Had a wonderful time chatting with you, and I hope to speak with you soon on another edition of Masterclass presented by Master Club Advisors.
Thanks, Gabe. Always fun to talk to you, my friend.
To learn more about Master Club Advisors, visit them on the web at masterclubadvisors.com and join us next month for another masterclass.
We get so many guests on this show. I think I've done almost 100 interviews at this point, and that might just be the best advice that I've heard in a long time, or the most outside the box idea, at least, that I really think could work. So I'd love to see some clubs incorporate that. All right, now we're going to do something a little different here on today's episode. I really want to set the stage for our next guest, Mark Ensign. So Mark is a storyteller, and this is a story that he actually gave on a mutual friend of ours' other podcast. It's called Story Jam Theater, which is a live performance that happens here in Tampa. And so I'm going to play for you this clip from Story Jam, which is Mark's own personal story. It's one of the most inspiring things I've ever heard. It's probably in my top three best stories I've ever heard of all time. And it's really worth the listen. So I hope, if nothing else, the story inspires you and drives you to be a better manager, to be a better membership director, to be a better whatever you are. And after this story, we'll bring Mark on to talk about how to tell a great story and how your club can really brand itself, differentiate itself by telling a compelling narrative. Have a listen.
So I graduated from Berklee College of Music with a degree in music performance and a dream to work on Broadway. I wanted to perform on a Broadway stage, which in and of itself is actually pretty funny because at the time I'd never actually been to a Broadway show. I didn't graduate from High School Musical, and college was nothing like the movie Fame. So, but for me, as a professional musician, there was nothing more exciting or big than working on Broadway. That was the epitome of success to me as a professional musician. So that's what I went after. And so, like any good college student dreams of, I moved back in with my mom after I graduated. And she lived right outside in New Jersey. And so it was very easy for me to get into the city. And at the time, the internet was in its infancy. So all we really had, there wasn't that much information online. There was just pretty much chat rooms and porn. And I had exhausted both of those. So it was time to actually come up with another plan. So I would head into the city every night and go to the theater. And go to every theater that I could possibly find that had a Broadway show, and I would steal a playbill. And my plan was that if I stole this playbill, I would have the name of everybody that performed that show, everybody in the orchestra. So night after night for weeks until I had a stack of playbills for every show that was open on Broadway. And then I went over to the Musicians Union, because when you go to the Musicians Union and you're a member of Local 802, you would get a directory of all the names and addresses and phone numbers of everybody that was in the union, which is everybody that was on Broadway. So I went over to the union and they said I couldn't join. Apparently you can't join unless you have a gig, but you can't get a gig without joining. So it didn't make any sense. So I did what any rational person would do. I went into the city the next day with a wire cutter and I stole a phone book from a payphone at the train station. And in that phone book, I was able to get about 50% of the address, the names that I had found in these playbills. And so I started writing I wrote them a letter, sent them a resume, sent them a demo tape, and sent out about 100 of them, and nothing. Didn't get a single call. So a week later, I tried back. I said, oh, let me call them. I'll follow up, make sure they got it. Maybe they didn't get it, didn't put enough stamps on it or something. And so I called every single one of them, and I heard the same thing. You're too young, too inexperienced. You're not very good. You need to practice. You don't know enough people. You wasted your money on your education. I was okay. But there was one guy, his name was John Monaco, and he was a musical director for a number of shows. And so he was actually pretty nice to me compared to everybody else. His story was, I can't talk to you. I got your package. I can't help you. You're not a member of the union. Go join the union, and I'll be happy to help you. I said, okay. So the next day, I run over to Local 802, and I said, hey, I need to join the union. I was told by John Monaco that I should be a member. And so she said, oh, so you got the gig? So John Monaco told me to join the union. What do you think? So she goes, oh, that's great. Oh, congratulations. I got the congratulations. Apparently John Monaco is directing a new show and they thought I was the bass player. So I got him. So from that point on, I was a card carrying member of Local 802. And so I went home, I raced home and I called John Monaco and I said, hey, look, I got my card. Here's the number. What do I need to do? And he said, okay, well, you're barking up the wrong tree. You don't need to be talking to musical directors. You don't need to be talking to guitar players and drummers and trumpet players. You need to be talking to bass players. That's who you want to replace. That's who you want to sub for. Call the bass players. I said, great. So I called all the bass players that day, just picked up the phone, just started dialing, calling every bass player. I heard that I wasn't experienced enough. I wasn't good enough. I was too young. I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't connected enough. My education was a waste of money. So that wasn't going to deter me. I figured, I started thinking about it, gave it a week or two, and it occurred to me that I have nothing to offer these people. They have a gig that I want, and I'm giving them nothing in return. I just want something. So I got to fix this. So I call them all up again. I said, hey, this is like 2 weeks later. I'm writing an article for Bass Player Magazine about what it's like to work on Broadway. Now, Bass Player Magazine was the biggest bass magazine in the world at the time. Would you like to be in the story? I'll feature you in the story. Every single bass player said yes. So all of a sudden, I had a meeting with every bass player where I figured I could interview them, find out what the hell they need for me to get this gig. And so I had an interview with every bass player. I got to sit in the pit of every single show on Broadway. I got to copy the music from every show on Broadway. I got to meet every single musician in the pit, and I was the guy. So it was perfect. It was the perfect plan with one exception. I didn't write for Bass Player Magazine. And they were expecting an article. So after I had talked to everybody, okay, I got all the information I needed. Now I think I can get the gig, but... So I called Bass Player Magazine. I figured, why not? So I called Bass Player Magazine. I said, look, I'm friends with all these people that work on Broadway. And I wrote an article about what it's like to be a bass player on Broadway. Would you guys be interested? And they said, we'll take it. Send it over to us. Perfect. Except I didn't write the article. I just interviewed the people. So now I have to write this article. They're expecting the article. So I write this article and I get it out. So they actually gave me $400 for it, which was hilarious because I was going to give it to them for free just to save a little face. And I sent the article came out in the magazine and I followed up with a phone call. And everybody said, thank you for the article. So I said, great. Now, what about the show? Is there any chance I can get on the show? It's this thing where I gave you something, now I want something. And they said, well, you're too young. You're not experienced. You're not good enough. You're not connected enough. So your education was a waste of money. But there was one guy that was really, really nice to me. He said, I can't tell you how much it meant to me to be in that. And he just kept saying that. So I was like, well, let's talk about it over dinner. And so I took him out to dinner and I was all ready with my pitch. I was going to get this show. I was going to knock this out of the park. And he was talking about his dad, and his dad was a bass player, and his dad had passed away 15 years earlier. And I didn't know at the time, but his dad had played for all these incredible musicians. He was the bass player for Bob Dylan, for Jim Croce, for all these amazing, amazing performers. The problem was back then they didn't actually put your name in the liner notes. What they did was they just never heard of you. You were a studio guy. You came in, recorded the record, and you left, and nobody ever heard of you. And he died, and he never got the notoriety that he wanted. Now here is this guy that's been struggling with this his entire life, and he now got the notoriety that his dad never got. And it was such an amazing, like just seeing the pain on this guy's face. And so I threw my pitch out, and I was like, you know what? I need to write an article about your dad. I'm the only guy here that can actually pull this thorn out of his paw. Let me write this article for you. And I can't make any promises, but I'm gonna do everything I can to get it published. And so I wrote an article called "The Most Famous Bass Player You've Never Heard Of," and I worked my ass off, and I got that article in the magazine. And, you know, he and I like hung out and we listened to, you know, records. He told me stories. I saw pictures of Bob Dylan with a cigarette pushing a baby carriage. And that was him. It was amazing. And so the article came out and it never followed up. I didn't do the pitch and I didn't do the now what do you have for me? Because it suddenly wasn't about that anymore. Like, this is about what I can do for him and how I can give to him and add value and then just walk away. So about a month after the article comes out, he calls me up and he said, "Hey, you know, I just wanted to find out, what are you doing the second week in January? I'm going to give you a chance. On Sunday, the Sunday matinee is, I'm going on vacation and I'll give you the Sunday matinee. But just keep in mind, if you blow it, you will never work on Broadway again." So it's October. I have 3 months. And so for 3 months, I ran the show in my bedroom 2 times a day. I ran the show with the lights off, with the lights on. I had flashlights that I pointed towards my face to mimic like the lights on stage. I would kick the music stand over to see if I was able to recover with the music on the ground. I put the music out of order to see if I can figure it out. I would play without music. Every time I was in the car, I would hum the bass line. That's all I listened to for 3 months. When on the weekends, on Saturday morning, I would head into the city and I would sit back and I would watch backstage. I would watch the show behind the bass player for the 3 hours, 2 hours. And then they would all go to dinner and I would play the show with my headphones on in the seat that I would be sitting in. And then they would come back and I'd sit and watch the second show. And I do this twice, Saturday and Sunday. For 3 months, I practiced the show every single day. I went and watched the show 4 times a week. I lived and breathed and ate this thing. It's all I would listen to. I wouldn't even spoil my brain with other music. It's all I would listen to. And so the months went by, and by the time it was my shot, I was going into the city. I had already played the show on Broadway. I had played it hundreds of times in my brain. Not a night went by that I didn't picture every single note in that show in my head. I played every single note in my head. And so when it was time to actually play the show, I had already done it. It was old news. I already got the standing ovation. I was good. Now it was just a matter of just showing everybody. Like, everybody was catching up with where I was a month or 2 months ago. And so, you know, I got there, set up my stuff, totally relaxed, didn't, you know, was completely in the moment. And I kicked its ass. I killed the show. And so when I got home, by the time I traveled from the stage to my house, there was a message on the machine from his while he was on vacation that said, "Hey, I don't know what you did, but the musical director recommended and highly suggested that I make you my number one sub. Congratulations." And so within a year, I was on tour with the show. And apparently, I was old enough, I was good enough, and my education wasn't a waste of money. Thank you.
If that story doesn't inspire someone out there, they probably don't have a pulse. What a great lesson to never, ever, 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 ever give up. My guest today is Mark Ensign. He is an influencer. He's got a blog that's reached millions worldwide. He's the founder of Loudmouse Authority Marketing. He's a former musician on the Broadway show Rent. And honestly, he's just an all-around good guy. I'm so happy to bring him on today to talk about storytelling and the art of telling a story and building your influence online. Mark, how are you doing today? Welcome to Private Club Radio.
I'm doing great, Gabe. How are you doing?
I am doing excellent. So a couple weeks back on this show, I mentioned to listeners about you and gave them some tips on how to turn what they're talking about or turn their brand message into a story. And so I figured, why not have the guy who is the inspiration for all that really say it in his own words here on the show. So I'm hoping you can do that for us today.
Sure. I'd be happy to.
Yeah. So Mark, in your opinion, why are stories so powerful? Why do they trump facts?
I think they trump facts, and I think they're so powerful is because that's how we as human beings connect. You know, from the time we're born, we're being read stories. We go through school reading books, reading stories. Songs are just stories in put to a melody. I mean, we're surrounded by stories so much of our life, and then all of a sudden in business, we try to make things very linear and black and white and factual, and we remove the story, which is the one thing that really kind of connects us all. And so by bringing that back, bringing story into your business, it really brings us back together. It, you know, really attaches somebody to your company on a much deeper level.
So on Private Club Radio, most of our listeners are general managers, and they're trying to both solidify their membership, get them to sort of sing the same tune, and also attract new members to the club. A lot of our clubs out there are looking for new members. So can they do that with stories? How do they go about it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, well, first of all, I think you can really accomplish anything on a business level by telling a story, by connecting with somebody. Now, of course, you have to have the facts, and you have to have be able to back up everything that you're, you know, part of what your story is. Once somebody does connect with you through the story, but the story is really what attracts somebody initially. So, from the perspective of a manager of a club, if you're just trying to sell memberships and that's all you're about, and look, you know, our grass is really green, the sand trap's really sandy, and it's going to cost you X amount of dollars, you should, you know, sign up today. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work as much as if you tell a story that really kind of attracts somebody to the meaning behind your club or what your club really stands for. And then once you've attracted them with that story, then you're standing up by, hey, our grass is really green, our sand trap's really sandy. Mm-hmm. But so those facts are definitely, you know, necessary, but it's really that story that initially makes somebody feel attracted to the club. And in addition to that, it's also the thing that keeps them coming back. Mm-hmm. So it becomes that, you know, that thing where it's like visiting an old friend.
Right.
Where that story is something that you have with your members, you have with your club, the members have with your club, that has them feeling like they're part of something bigger and better than just, I'm going to, you know, play a couple rounds of golf.
Right. Yeah. It's something that unifies everyone. I really feel like. So what I'd like you to do is maybe walk us through the anatomy of telling a good story. What makes a good story, and how do you actually build a story from facts?
Okay, so really at the core level of a story is, if you look at movies, if you look at books, if you look at any story that's really kind of stood the test of time, it always follows a very similar kind of outline or similar kind of map. And basically it starts with a character. That character has a problem. And then at some point meets a guide, somebody else other than themselves, a secondary person, and that person has a solution to that problem, or has a plan, or has some direction. Mm-hmm. That guide challenges them to take action, and that action either results in something successful, it's a happy story, or some kind of failure, it's a drama, or something that's a little more difficult.
All right, Mark. Well, can you give me an example, maybe in pop culture or a movie, where that story arc actually takes place?
Sure. So I think a great example that everybody probably knows is Star Wars. So Star Wars is, you have a character. That character is Luke Skywalker. He has a problem. He's up against the dark side.
It's a big problem.
that's a pretty heavy problem for one guy to take on. I mean, it is the dark side after all. Then he meets a guide, somebody that can help him, and that guide is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan introduces him to a solution or a plan or a way, and that way is the Force. So you have Luke Skywalker, dark side. meets Obi-Wan Kenobi, introduces him to the Force, and then there's, calls him to action to take down the Death Star. And that results in success, blowing up the Death Star. Everybody's happy. We all live happily ever after until the next movie.
Until they go backwards in the next movie.
until they build the next Death Star.
Right.
So it is, and it's prevalent in so many different movies and so many different books and so many different areas of life. And it works. It really works. It does bring people in. And now, of course, when you're talking about a club. I can't imagine, anybody out there listening is battling, the dark side. But there's a story behind that club, or there's a story behind the person that started the club. Maybe it's the founder, and what's the founder's story? Mm-hmm. Or because it's a major investment and a major ordeal to build a club like this. You don't just do it because I got nothing else to do. I'm going to go build a club. I mean, you invest your life and this is your life's work has been built into this. There's something deeper than I just like to play golf.
Right. So many of our clubs have incredibly storied history about how the founders got together and actually came up with one of these things. Maybe they took a piece of land that was barren, or there's all sorts of stories out there. And it's really that you have to draw that out of folks sometimes because they forget it. So do you actually have any tips in order to build a story, Mark? Like how do you search into the soul of a company and draw out that narrative that's going to be compelling?
I'd like to start off by looking at it from a more human perspective. So if you ask anybody, the founder or a member of a company, the CEO, whoever it is, ask them what the company story is, they will toe the line and read the, back in 1982, we start, they will go into the factual point. Mm-hmm. So I always like to kind of pick at the person that I'm talking to, what's your why? And just using you as an example. You have a successful marketing agency, and then you started working with clubs, you started this podcast. I know there's an enormous amount of time and effort that goes into this. It's not just because you saw a niche in the market and just said, hey, look, I'm going to start a podcast and start talking to clubs, or it's because there's something much deeper there. So what is that thing, in your case that has you, wanting to do this, that has you connected with other, with wanting to, talk about, private clubs every week, on your podcast?
Yeah. Well, the answer to that is something I've really never told too many people about. But what happened was I was alone on a desert island, Mark. That's how it all starts. That's how every great story starts, right?
Is the dark side involved in this? Or?
No. I was in the Asia Pacific. I was living in the Philippines. I had gone out for basically took a year off with a friend of mine, and my uncle was living on this little tiny island, a speck on the map. It's called Sikior. It's about a 30-mile wide island out in the Pacific. And what happened was my really good friend who I was living with and my uncle both had to go back to the United States to take care of some personal business. And it left me on this island all alone with nothing to do, literally nothing to do. I mean, this wasn't an island that had McDonald's or anything. It was a completely remote place. And I ran into a guy playing some basketball at the community basketball gym. And he says, hey, Gabe, you like to play tennis? And I said, yeah, I do like playing tennis. And he invited me over to his club. It was the first club I ever joined. It cost me $20 to join this club. First private club I ever joined. And I found a community there. And it really saved me from probably going insane by myself in this really remote place. So I guess that would be what got me started.
Okay, so now I would challenge you to go even deeper than that.
Okay,
because I think I think there's some level of not truth. I mean, some level of truth there. Not that I'm suggesting that you're lying or anything else, but I think there's something deeper because because you showed up at the, you went to that club at that point. You were an adult at that point. Mm-hmm. So you went to that club because it was a familiar or safe place. And then that kind of, solidified something that you already knew. How long have you been playing golf?
I've been playing golf since I was 3 years old, actually. Yeah. My father was a PGA club professional.
Okay. All right. So there you go. So now, like now we're talking about you're starting, you have, golf running through your veins. Like it, this came down from dad, and I'm sure you had some pretty, great moments with your dad and
look, yeah, you know, I still do. He still beats me. He still beats me. He's almost a 70-year-old man, and it's extremely embarrassing. He just beat me last weekend, in fact.
Nice. So pissed. All right. Mm-hmm. So I'm so pissed. So I would start digging deeper in there. Here you are, an adult. You have a successful marketing company. You've decided to dedicate a good chunk of your time, attention, and professional life to surrounding yourself with clubs like this. This goes back to when you were a kid. Like mm-hmm. You're bringing some of that back into your life. You're positioning yourself where you're an authority in this industry to kind of bring, you know, I would even challenge to kind of bring some of this into your family, where, you know, your dad was a, you know, PGA level player. And so clearly you're not, because he keeps beating you at 70 years old. But this is something that really kind of positions you as an authority in this mm-hmm. industry, you know, where, your kids are probably, you know, right around that age where you're going to start, where you get to stand up,
teach them the game. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
And so there's so much more here than, you know, I visited this club and in the Philippines. Now that's part of your story, but your story started well before that. Mm-hmm. And what I would challenge you to do is really kind of dig back into those years and about what it was like, you know, watching your dad and going to the club with your dad and kind of tell that story. I mean, this isn't like you're not a guy that draws really nice logos and then saw a hole in the market that you decided to fill. You know, you're a guy that has this running through their veins, and you just happen to have a really strong marketing background and creative eye. And so you're able to bring all of that together. Like, who better to understand and design and get your club better than the guy that has really nailed both sides of this thing, not just the marketing, but really understands the club because you grew up there. Mm-hmm. And so I would, you know, like start to create your story based on that, like really start to dig into that. And what that does is like, you know, a club that might be interested in hiring you begins to see you as, and this isn't a pitch for you. So for your listeners,
you're hired, Mark, you're hired.
but what I mean is like anybody that, like, you know, if I'm a club and I'm looking at three different, potential companies, it'd be really hard to say no to you because you get me, you know, you get the club, you understand, you know, the passion that goes into this. You're not just looking at it from a marketing eye. You know, you're one of us.
So if I'm hearing you right, it's the building this story really builds that personal rapport that takes the face of the business, you know, and it makes it something that's not cold anymore, but something that's very human. Am I getting you there?
Yeah. And you're creating a why, like, you know, again, there's a big difference between your why being, oh, there was nobody else doing it, so I figured, you know, I could get a whole bunch of clients. Like, boy, that doesn't feel very good if I'm looking at hiring you and I'm right. just, I'm, you know, I'm the hole in the market that you decided to fill. Yeah, right. Versus, you know, I want to hire, you know, somebody that is on that same, you know, that really understands it's part of the family, that knows what it's like to be so passionate about the sport. Mm-hmm. And so when you start telling that story, it's a whole different, you know, it's a whole different level of connection. You know, again, it becomes really difficult to say no to that, to question your integrity, you know, to, you know, wonder if you can do the job. Like, all those things get thrown out. And the mm-hmm. same thing from a club perspective, if you're telling the story about why you started this club and how important it is to you, and it's not just about, it's not just, like we're not just, you know, we didn't just see some land and dug a couple holes and then, you know, and put up a building and now you can go play golf. Like, this is about so much more.
Right.
And you start telling that story and people will just flock to it because, you know, we all want to feel connected. Like we don't mind paying more. We don't mind jumping through hoops when it's for something that, you know, we want to be a part of, mm-hmm. that we want to feel connected to.
Right.
And you know, a club is a great example of that because that really is like it's you know, many people see it as a bit of a home away from home. It's where they network. It's where they go to relax. They go to de-stress. They go to have fun. They go to meet with clients. Like it's someplace that really has to have some meaning to them.
Right. Yep. Perfect. Perfect. It's so true. I mean, why do you think though that clubs and other businesses forget to tell stories? Why do they get so wrapped up in the details?
I don't think it's so much that they forget. I think that there's a this idea that companies don't like to they're afraid to show they're afraid to stand up naked in front of the room, okay. I guess for lack
sure.
of a better
yeah,
word.
Right.
Where it's, it, you know, if you find out my flaws or my faults, then you're going to think less of me. Mm-hmm. When really the opposite is true. Now, if your flaws and faults are, hey, I'm a bank robber and I've, you know, like that, right. like we want to keep that to yourself. By allowing yourself to you know stand up and you know naked in front of that room, you're giving a human side of the company that you know most people don't get to see. And we connect with humans. We don't connect with. I mean, we're attracted to logos. We're attracted to colors. We're attracted to you know the location or the price or whatever all that other stuff is. But we fall in love with stories and we fall in love with other people. And that's a big difference. That's the difference between, let's dip our toe in the water and see how it goes. And I am, you know, making a commitment that I will be here, you know, forever. Like this is where I'm, you know, this is where I'm planting my flag and you know, my kids are going to be members, that my kids' kids are going to be members like because we are part of this family.
So what are some ways to do that? Is it that you maybe go to your members and ask for testimonials or personal stories? How would you actually go about telling stories about the club?
Well, from a testimonial perspective, I would talk to the members from a place of instead of asking them to, you know, hey, would you mind giving us a testimonial? Because then they'll always say, oh, everybody here is really nice. And
right.
The bathrooms are always clean.
Right.
and like, all right. I mean, I guess those are things that you want.
Bartender
so that's good.
Can make a mean old fashioned.
Right, exactly. Yep. So there definitely is that. However, you know, if you could ask your members, you know, like, what was one of the best experiences you can remember on the course, you know, in our club, mm-hmm. and they start telling a story about, you know, maybe a conversation they had with somebody, or sometimes like you know, maybe it's something that I decided to bring my wife. My wife doesn't really like to play, but I convinced her to come with me, and we played, and it was the worst, you know, the worst score I've ever shot, but one of the best times I've ever had.
Right.
And so you start telling, you know, they'll start to give you that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. which is so meaningful and really will really make somebody look at it and go, yeah, I want some of that.
Right.
And if you can get those stories on video, or you can ask them like right as they're getting off the course, mm-hmm. it's the best way to do it. It's a little unrelated, but it's not. I had a client of mine that was it was a wedding band, and they had a bunch of, they must've had 200 written testimonials on their website, and nobody spent more than 8 seconds on that page. And, mm-hmm. and it was clear that nobody was reading them.
Right.
Nobody really cared. And you know, 200 of them is going to really do anything, because it's just too much to actually read.
Sure.
And so
they probably said nothing like you mentioned before.
Right. So what I had recommended that they do was you have your iPhone with you, you know, on the gig. When the gig is over and the bride comes over to give you that final payment, ask if she'll do a testimonial in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be professional. You're just holding the camera, and uh, he he did about, over the course of a month, did about six or seven of them. We erased all the other testimonials, put these six or seven video testimonials there. There were no more than about 45 seconds each. And all of a sudden that page jumped to about 3 or 4 minutes that people spent on the page. But more importantly, the phone was ringing off the hook, and it was because everybody was watching these videos. Like, brides were watching these videos. And, this is 4 hours after somebody, right. This bride got married. She was on top of the world, the happiest moment of her life. And he got it on video.
It's the most authentic time you could possibly get them. Yeah,
that's exactly. Perfect. And so what the result of that was, everybody that called said, I want to feel the way that she looked and felt in that video at the end of my wedding.
Nice.
And so that was all, like, now it was just a matter of taking their pulse. Like, how do I get that? How do I feel like that at the end of my wedding? And so if you can get those kind of stories instead of those kind of testimonials instead of your typical the place is really nice, it makes a huge difference.
And a lot of our clubs are looking to actively get in weddings and events and things like that, so that's actually a really good tip, Mark. I appreciate that so much for you sharing in that. Sure. Now before we wrap things up, I want to talk a little bit about who Mark is and what you're up to.
Just to give you the 30 to 60 second version, I started off my life as a professional musician and made my way onto Broadway through the show Rent. And from there, I found that I was really good at marketing. Like, I really got marketing. And that was one of the ways, between that and persistence, was one of the ways that I really was able to make a niche for myself in the world of music. And so I started a marketing company, and I started doing a lot of work for musicians and artists. And then I realized musicians and artists usually never had any money. So I kind of expanded that into corporate work. And started doing work for Nike, American Express, Travel and Leisure Magazine. And this was back like 16, 17 years ago when there wasn't that much going on as far as websites. Like, people didn't have websites, and the ones they did were just awful looking. Right. So it was very easy to kind of work your way in if you knew anything about website design. Fast forward, 16, 17 years later, and here I am. I've worked with at least 1,000 companies on their marketing, and felt completely unfulfilled. I always had this dream that I was going to make a difference in the world, and working for the local plumber and electrician, not that there's anything wrong with that, just wasn't fulfilling to me. It didn't feel like I was making a difference. Right. And so I left that company and started a new company called Loud Mouse. And it's loudmouse.com, LOUDMOUSE.com. And what we do is we specialize in coaches, speakers, authors, and entrepreneurs. It's not just that, but it's like people that have that mission, that the mission-driven entrepreneurs, those that really want to get out, tell their story, make a difference, clarify their message, and kind of bring it to forefront, get it in front of a lot of people.
Mark, how do folks reach out to you and get in touch with you if they want to learn more or possibly work with Loud Mouse?
Sure. You can go to the website, loudmouse, LOUDMOUSE.com.
LOUDMOUSE.
Right. I feel like I have to spell it because like half the time everybody goes loudmouth.
Right.
I'm like, oh, not loudmouth. It's loud mouse. And so like that, then I get self-conscious about it. Like, do I have a lisp or something? Like, maybe I don't realize that I'm just not saying it right. So loudmouse.com, or you can reach out to me directly at Mark with a C at loudmouse.com, or you can also stop by my my personal blog, which is markensign.com, markensign.com.
Now, Mark, you also have a free gift for our listeners. What is that?
Sure. So if you go to loudmouse.com, there is a sign up on the homepage for a free ebook, and it's a book called Search Engine Humanization. And what it is it basically is going to teach you how to increase your search engine rankings by being human. So what that means is how to basically befriend Google into seeing you as an authority in your field, while also really connecting with your audience, visitors. So this is not a silver bullet on how to change your meta tags or all this other technical stuff that's probably tripped you up in the past. This is really about this is something that anybody can do, and it will dramatically increase your engagement. It will dramatically increase your search engine rankings and really connection with your audience.
Ooh, I like that. What I'll do, I'll also put that link on your show notes page on the website. So if you guys want to check that out and download that from Mark, I'll put the link right there on so you can get to it. Mark, thank you so much for being on Private Club Radio today. So wonderful to have you, man.
Oh, thanks, Gabe. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Man, I'm going to be sad to wrap this episode up. It was such a good time. I enjoyed it immensely. I bet you did. Thank you for spending an hour here on Private Club Radio with me. I know you have a lot to do. You're busy, and I appreciate the fact that you tune into this show each and every week. I hope it's always a value to you. If there is something that you want to hear, a special subject, or something that we haven't covered, please go over to privateclubradio.com/vote and tell me about it. Let me know what you'd like to hear, because this show is all about you. Coming up in the coming weeks for Private Club Radio, we're going to do a little series on food and beverage. That was actually something that was requested by our listeners. And so, yes, I pay attention. I want to hear what you want to hear, and I will give it to you. I will find the best guests that can deliver on that subject for you. But I got to know about it. If I don't know about it, I can't do that. So please vote over at privateclubradio.com/vote. Also, don't forget to join the Facebook group, the Private Club Radio Listeners Forum. Just search for Private Club Radio inside Facebook. It'll come right up. And we are having a discussion over there about some of the episodes. You can connect with the guests on there. It's a good time. Until next week, here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by the Private Club Agency, the premier marketing and consulting firm dedicated to helping clubs increase and retain their membership. Visit privateclubagency.com to learn more.